case of In Re Zucori, Appeal 1119 from 2008. Good morning, counsel. Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Your Honor, may it please the court, I'm Susan Goodman with Kilpatrick Stockton. With me at counsel table is Ms. Patria Papps, who is involved in the PPO proceedings in the fourth board. And seated behind us at counsel table is one of the inventors, Dr. Saul Zucori. We're here today on an appeal from a rejection of all pending claims by the board. We believe that rejection does not meet the test of substantial evidence to support it, because had the board considered all of the evidence before it, that substantial evidence pointed unerringly to one conclusion, and that was the great novelty of the discovery of the Zucori inventors. The board, shortly after the decision in KSR, picked up on a couple of points in KSR, that you don't leave common sense behind you and you have to take into account creativity, but it ignored the teaching that we've got to go back and avoid hindsight analysis that takes what the current claims and discoveries of the proposed patent would be and work back from it to say, oh yes, there are bits and pieces here in prior art that we can put together, and if we do, we will have the invention of your claims.
I'm not sure really what the thrust of your argument is. Are you saying the references on which the examiner and the board depended were not combinable?
I'm saying there was nothing that would suggest, in fact, that they would combine or that they would work. There's a problem with all of the references because they do not appreciate the fundamental scientific reality. And it's what the board didn't understand about the significance of the evidence about the piglet model. This is not a claim of the model.
The piglet model is not incorporated into the claim.
It does.
So in assessing whether the invention as claimed is obvious, it seems to me the piglet model is utterly irrelevant, no matter how scientifically valuable an insight it might be.
No, Your Honor, it gets the issue of the predictability, which has become, I think, very critical as this court's opinions in the whole chain of looking at what post-KSR you do in looking at predictable arts with finite solutions, and then whether you would predict if you take this and try this or combine it with that, you will get a successful solution. We're now dealing in this patent with technology in a highly unpredictable area where there are potentially hundreds of different kinds of monoclonal, polyclonal, or whatever clonal antibodies that one might attempt to try. The problem with all the models, even the Williams reference notes this, the mouse models, the rabbit models, the experimental models, the in vitro models, was where you get predictability from those results to teach you the unique thing in this patent. And that was that one could have human, humanized, or chimeric monoclonal antibodies specific to this sugar-like toxin 2, and more specific to particular subunits of it,
right,
and be effective. Alpha and the beta. To get to even the idea of subunits, the board picks and chooses bits and pieces from primarily what it does with the Williams and the Pereira screening.
I'm still not sure I'm really getting the brunt of your attack here. Looked to me like all of this art was so precisely in the same field that it was quite readily combined.
Well,
either that's right or it's wrong. If it's right, then you have to say, well, it doesn't suggest the various limitations in the claim. But it looks to me like if you add to Crevan the teachings of the secondary references, of which there were several, you do seem to get this exact invention.
Well,
so I'm having trouble understanding Where the board went wrong.
Well, the board, I think, went wrong in thinking that this was a situation where you would attempt to put those references together with a high likelihood and expectation of success, which is one of the keys. Well, I don't think that mere hope is enough for predictability.
Because you said the high likelihood of success, I thought And generally, one of the things that characterizes chemical compounds is you don't know what's going to happen. You think, you hope it's going to do certain things if it's combined, different molecules, different elements, but you're never sure. It's not as predictable as if you have some electrical device and you know that if you introduce electric current here, this is going to produce heat. It doesn't work that simple.
And it's even less predictable if the chemical is being put into a human with the additional complications of human biology and reactions in the human system. That, I think, is what this panel, not this panel, but this court's recent opinion in the ISI versus Dr. Reddy Laboratory case stressed, is that when you talk about combining references or when you talk about saying that you'd have a teaching if you looked in the art and saw that, okay, there's something about salts, there's something about antibodies to these salts that might effectively treat. And you pick some reference to a subunit here and a subunit there. You still don't have any teaching in that art that identifies clearly that it's salt 2, not salt 1, as William seems to suggest. Kerwin doesn't have a clue which salt it is. He just says, let's go after salts generally. You don't have direct teachings that it should be specific to the subunits or understand how the subunits work in any of these. And you have all of these references, including Kerwin and Williams, which are years after the two references that teach, oh, you can make monoclonal human antibodies or humanize things. They didn't do that. They apparently didn't find it necessary to suggest that why don't we take our polyclonal avian-derived or bovine-derived antibodies and let's make them humanized. What these inventors did, and what we've explained in the brief, their experiment showed it from the application, information that's never once discussed in the board opinion, is that they got very contrarian results. That after coming up with some screening out of hundreds, we're not talking a little finite selection that you might look to, but after coming up with some screening panels, you found that this binding affinity and high levels of affinity, which can produce in a petri dish some form of neutralization of a toxin or a subunit of a toxin, that didn't correlate with which monoclonal antibody would actually work. And here the piglet model becomes relevant because apparently there are only two species that really have the same progression with these virulent strains that produce HUS. You find a progression from an enteric infection primarily associated with the beta subunit of Shiga 2 into a systemic infection that's caused by the alpha subunit. And they found that the binding affinities, which you might thought would help tell you if it's a stronger binding partner and in a petri dish looks like it's better, it doesn't necessarily work. They got surprising results that their best treatment turned out to be the alpha subunit and that it was very specific, certain defined human monoclonal antibody. And there's a lot out there. You can say, yeah, Kerwin talks about we're going to have some antibodies, and he talks about modifying DNA, but he never talks about humanized, and he doesn't have any appreciation of the key significance of two subunits and the different things they do and why you have to target and identify monoclonal antibodies specific to those subunits. Kerwin has no teaching whatsoever on that. He just has a broad claim saying we're going to use my antibodies, my polyclonal antibodies someday to treat humans without any real suggestion of how he does it. The board compounded, I think, its failure to appreciate the novelty of the invention by the way it chose to group claims and never independently examine three dose-specific claims.
I understand that novelty was anything the board relied on, but the board relied on obviousness.
Well, obviousness, if I said novelty, it's a 103 issue all the way. And in that standpoint, obviously obviousness is ultimately part of the issue. Is this something that is a new invention that we want to protect? And it is based on not a single reference, but a combination under section 103. With respect to those three claims, 34, 35, and 36, they identified very specific ways to measure an effective dosage with numerical quantification based upon unique experimental results. Priven stated a very broad range. There are decisions of this court that recognize that you can have patentably distinct subject matter when you find very specific effective units within a broad range. That was never considered by the board.
Well, there's something that you keep saying that the board didn't consider this, and the board obviously didn't understand that, and the board gave no way to that, and so on. But we have said frequently, written a couple of these opinions, that the failure of a tribunal to discuss a point doesn't mean that the tribunal didn't consider it. And therefore, I don't know if you can fairly say that because the board didn't discuss all of these points that you're making, the board didn't consider them. The board may have considered them and concluded that they didn't want discussion.
Well, Your Honor, there's also other lines of authority with which I'm sure you and the other members of the panel are very familiar that talks about the need to have a reasoned analysis so that we don't get lost in a fog of putative expertise on the part of some agency representative that's never disclosed in a reasoned opinion addressing the evidence before them. Well, and the fact that the application is never once mentioned in this
opinion. In this case, the board didn't just write two pages saying we've considered their contentions to find them unpersuasive, it went into and discussed in considerable detail these various arguments.
But it never once, for example, discussed the application and the experiments in the application. It sort of blew away any of the declarations related to the significance of the piglet model, which was really trying to show the total unpredictability and unexpected results that would arrive once you finally got the right sort of animal model, which the declarant says is the only way you find what an effective dosage is. Just like the board says, hey, we have no evidence of unmet need. Well, the application recounted all the outbreaks and incidents of the severity of these diseases. If we're free to look at what a person of ordinary skill in the art would know, surely the headlines in 2007 about people dying and getting sick because spinach was contaminated with E. coli suggests there was an unmet need for an effective treatment for this kind of infection and outbreak, and that there wasn't anything yet that was doing that, though some of these prior art references had been around for a number of years. And so, to the extent that there was evidence of that nature, and you have a board opinion saying, oh, we didn't see any evidence of unmet need. It was there in the application. Dr. Savori appeared for the board, and if you look at the appendix, page 35, which isn't in the joint appendix, you'll see he talked about the spinach episodes. A number of other references were presented that talked about the incidence and severity of this disease for which there was no currently effective treatment. And these inventors came up with a very surprising discovery, possible only through using an animal model that is predictive of humans, in contrast to results that these other people got when they used cell lines in a petri dish, or tried mice which don't develop HUS, or rabbits which don't develop HUS, and said, well, we got some treatment of these animals, which is not at all predictive of whether what they disclosed would work in humans. You had to do the detailed experiments described in the applications of Pori to make that discovery and determine what were the regions, what did you need to bind, what were the monoclonals to choose, and discover that in fact a lot of things that one might have thought would predict did not. Those experiments were critical. The board opinion, for whatever reason, chooses not to mention a single reference to the application details with the experiments. And without doing that, it is difficult to understand why are these people talking about a piglet model. It's because you have to have that to get to the prediction and the ability to come up with something, a specific dosage, that will deal with the human condition, which is so similar to the pig of all lowly animals, which is the only other species that seems to develop these 80 lesions in the gut that let the disease migrate by letting the alpha subunit of Shiga-2-like toxin into a systemic circulation. It's in the blood. They propose to treat it by injecting into the bloodstream these types of monoclonal antibodies specific to subunits. And for reasons we've spent probably more paper than the court really wishes any of us would use, we believe that you don't see a motivation to combine those references. You don't see inventors preceding these even thinking that the monoclonal human antibody was a something they needed to be thinking about. And they don't disclose subunit-specific treatment to SHGA 2.
All right, nowhere in the office. Let's hear from the government and we'll give you a couple minutes for rebuttal. McManus, welcome. Please proceed.
May it please the court. The board here correctly found a very strong prima facie case of obviousness for the lone independent claim, Claim 26. As this court has indicated in its questions to my opponent, Claim 26 is a dosage formulation. There's nothing in there about the Piglet model. In fact, there's nothing in there in the other claims about using the Piglet model or methods of determining potential therapies of treating SHGA-like toxin-related diseases. Claim 26 is a dosage formulation. Crevon teaches a lion's share of the limitations in Claim 26. Crevon teaches you to use antibodies to the SHGA-like toxin 2 to prevent or treat diseases like HUS in humans. Now, what it doesn't treat or doesn't teach is the subunit specificity. But that is plainly taught by Pereira and Williams. Pereira and Williams teach you antibodies to the alpha and beta subunits of SHGA-like toxin 2, and more importantly, that those antibodies neutralize the toxin. The board correctly found at A6 that given that disclosure, one would have been motivated to take those antibodies and use them in the method of prevention or treatment taught by Crevon. Their reliance on the Piglet model was misplaced. You cannot rely on unclaimed limitations to show non-obviousness. Moreover, I don't think Zipori is saying, well, I'm the first one to use the Piglet model. The evidence actually suggests the contrary. For example, Dr. Gunzer, who submitted the declaration in support of Dr. Zipori, says at A66, I've been using the Piglet model since 1994 to test these kind of pathogens. There's also the Shiorin article at A 177 that cites two articles from 1991 and 1987, both talking about the Piglet and the fact that the way the disease works in the Piglet mimics the way it works in humans. So it's not like the Piglet wasn't known out there or that the Piglet could be used to investigate these kind of diseases. All Dr. Zipori has done, perhaps a scientific contribution, but has confirmed the teaching of the art. That's what this court said in Pharmastead. That may be a scientific contribution, but that is not necessarily entitled you to a patent.
Well, am I correct that their argument is that only in the Piglet would you get this medical reaction? That this reaction took place either in humans or in Piglets. And that was one of the things they discovered, that you had to use Piglet. If you used turkeys or cows or sheep, it wouldn't work. And as I understand, their argument is that the board just ignored that and didn't even mention that unusual situation. And I don't know, is it a full answer to say, well, the claim made no reference to the Piglet?
True,
the claim made no reference to the Piglet, but what the Piglet's significance in determining whether or not what they did would have been obvious, or whether they made a real contribution.
A couple of responses, General. First and foremost, the board did address the merits of the Piglet evidence at page 20. And the board said, your declarants, Leong, Gunzer, and Drs. Moon and Tarr, all say only that the pig model offers, quote, uniquely relevant to studying these kinds of infections, offers great potential to investigating potential therapies. Problem is, the therapy they seek to get a patent on would have been within the skill and the art, Crevon, Williams, and Pereira teaching. So the fact that the Piglet model may have unique potential for investigating therapies is sort of a non-starter where that therapy was already in the art. More importantly, none of those declarants said that you could only use the Piglet model to investigate these kind of pathogens. While they may be preferred in the art, that's clearly belied by Crevon, who Crevon teaches the method or the pharmaceutical composition that they seek to use to prevent or treat. Williams and Pereira don't use the Piglet model, yet they teach monoclonal.
Well, one of the references thought that they put this into cows, didn't it?
In Crevon used cows to generate his antibodies. He didn't necessarily use them to treat or prevent us in the cow. He used the cow to generate the antibodies because he found surprisingly that when you put it into the cow did not have an adverse reaction to the toxin. So that was preferred as opposed to the usual situation where you had to inoculate the antibody generator first. So He used cows to generate his antibodies. Now, of course, he teaches polyclonal antibodies, but based on Queen and Engelman, the references cited by the examiner and confirmed by the board, the use of monoclonal antibodies in these kind of treatments was known in the art. Which actually brings us back to another point that opponent raised, which is the novelty, in their words, but the obviousness, non-obviousness of prevention methods. Prevon teaches that, and I don't think there's a dispute, the general use of antibodies to passively immunize humans was well known in the art. Prevon talks about that, and that's probably why he focuses on it. The knowledge that you could use antibodies to passively immunize humans was well known. Prevon tells us that at A957, starting at about line 10, down through 24. So, Prevon teaches, in combination with Williams and Pereira, the claim. The issue of reasonable expectation of success was firmly vetted by the board and soundly rejected. They said at A14-16 that the evidence was to the contrary. There was a reasonable expectation that you could use the antibodies of Pereira in the treatment of Prevon, largely because Pereira taught neutralization of the toxin. So too Williams. Williams teaches neutralization of the toxin. As this court explained multiple times in Apotex, for example, it doesn't have to be a certainty. All you have to show is that there was a reasonable expectation that it would work. And the fact that Williams and Pereira teach neutralization supported the conclusion that there was. The allegation that this is an unpredictable art is unto itself not dispositive. As this court explained in Apotex, unpredictability only gets you so far. You have to show that in light of the unpredictability, there was no reasonable expectation of success, which the board correctly rejected. Now, the issue of, as they termed it, contrarian results, there is no evidence, and there was no argument to the board, of unexpected results here. All the declaratory evidence, for example, says is that the pig model is preferred. It doesn't say, and there's no evidence, that the antibodies that they tested in their piglet model were any different than the antibodies that Pereira and Williams, for example, teach, or that the antibodies taught by the cited references wouldn't work. Just that I prefer the pig, and the pig mimics the human well, so it proves to be a very efficacious model. On the issue of dosage, the board correctly found that Prevon teaches dosages. That's firmly laid out at 960. He teaches a range of dosages. He teaches that one skill in the art will understand you have to vary the dosage depending on the disease and the patient.
And that,
Admittedly, Claim 26, the independent claim, does use a generic term effective dosage. Although the dependents do recite
the list of explicit doses.
That's correct.
Nothing in the main claim lists a dosage. It just talks about an effective dosage.
That's correct. But the passage at 960 in Prevon, starting at line.
I suppose in every pharmaceutical product, you want to provide an effective dosage as the purpose of it.
I believe that's correct. And that's what Cisforti tells us in his declaration. He says, to actually come up with the effective dose for the human, I'm going to have to wait till clinical trials. Everything else is a best guess. And that's what Prevon tells us. He's starting at column 10, line 28 through 55. People in the art understand how to come up with dosages. My range is 100 milligrams to 5 grams, but that you're going to need to vary it depending on the nature of your situation. So, and finally, on long-felt need, the board soundly rejected that argument, largely because there's no evidence that others in this art had tried but failed to provide the method or the pharmaceutical composition that they seek to claim. Contrast that with the Gambro case, where the court concluded that there was evidence of long-felt need, largely because others had tried and failed to provide a solution to the problem. There was ultrafiltration in dialysis machines. Others had tried to play with the mechanics, had tried other various solutions that failed until the patentee came along and came up with a solution. There is no evidence here of the failure of others. Given all of that, given the strong evidence of obviousness and the failure to rebut that with secondary evidence consideration, we respectfully request that this court affirm the board decision. If there are any other questions?
I have a question about the grouping of claims 27 to 29.
Sure. The board grouped claims 27 and 29 because that was how Zipori treated them in his board. If you look at
what was the basis of rejecting Claim 28, chosen as the representative claim?
The board treats the teachings of Claims 28 and 20... Did you say 28 and 26, Sean?
28.
Okay. 28, at A23, the board addresses the merits of dependent Claim 28. Claim 28 limits the antibody of Claim 26 to recombinant DNA methodology. That's explicitly what Queen teaches, as the board points out there. Does that address Your Honor's question?
No. The board seems to rely on the examiner's references to reject Claim 28.
That's correct.
He seems to refer you to the examiner's answer.
He does rely, he does incorporate the findings of fact that the examiner made with respect to the teachings of the references. That is correct. And Queen, if you look at Queen, is found in the appendix F, starting at A154, 1054. Queen teaches the use or the generation of antibodies using recombinant DNA technologies. Now, Queen doesn't teach using those antibodies to treat shiga-like toxin-related diseases, but he or she, I can't tell, Carrie Queen, Queen does teach using those antibodies in methods of treatment. What the board said here and what the examiner said was that the technology of creating the human eyes or human antibodies was well known in the art at the time, and that Queen teaches the motivation to use those antibodies in the treatment method taught by Prevost, specifically the fact that recombinant or humanized antibodies are less likely to be rejected by the human body while still maintaining the same affinity for the antigens. So there was a motivation to use this type of antibody in the treatment of Prevost for our waste.
It looked to me like Queen taught away. Looked like Queen said, don't do this because it won't work.
Where is Your Honor referring to a specific? Or perhaps you're referring to the section they're arguing about example 19? About subunit specificity or... I'm not sure, because Queen teaches, for example, if you look at Queen, make sure I read the right new page. I'm sorry, I was thinking of Wade, that's not Queen. I'm not sure, I don't believe there's any teaching in Queen about teaching away. Queen suggests that you can use recombinant DNA antibodies in methods of, I'm looking at. Actually, Queen was only cited for the recombinant DNA. There's nothing in there that I'm aware of that suggests you could use those humanized immunoglobulins. In fact, that's the reason why you want to create recombinant DNA, as Queen says at 1054 in the abstract. When you combine the humanized immunoglobulins, they have substantially non-immunogenic in humans, retaining the same affinity as the donor immunoglobulin to the antigen, which of course the antigen is... That's the mechanism by which the antibody does what you want it to do. It binds to the antigen and renders it ineffective. So I'm not aware of anything in Queen that would suggest you could use Queen's antibodies in a method of treatment or prevention taught by the references.
Well, Queen says something about the results will be uncertain because of the unpredictable binding affinities. That looked to me like it was teaching this isn't a useful direction to move in.
Well, I'm not aware of any such teaching in Queen. Perhaps, because again, Queen was only cited for sort of the, I don't want to use the term generic, but for the teaching of recombinant, people knew how to make recombinant DNA antibodies as required by one of the dependent claims. Queen wasn't cited
for... And what else is the PTO relying on to cite Queen to reject 28?
Well, Claim 28 says, and remember, it's the combination of... Claim 28 limits the antibodies of Claim 26 to those generated by recombinant DNA technologies. The examiner and the board cited Queen for that specific teaching, but of course, 28 depends on 26, and 26 is taught by the references Krieg, Pereira, and Williams. That's the more global teaching of the treatment or prevention method. All Queen is supplementing is people in the art would have understood and would have been motivated to use recombinant DNA-generated antibodies in that treatment. There's been no argument, and I'm not aware of any citation in Queen, that would suggest you couldn't use those recombinant DNA technology in there. And in fact, Prevon's, or Tisfortis' own specification teaches that you can, that the recombinant DNA methods, one second, at 553 of the specification, starting at line 10, it says, in addition, monoclonal antibodies which specifically bind to ST, SLT1, and SLT2 can be produced by recombinant DNA methodology, citing to a 1993 manual from Cold Spring Harbor course. So I don't think there's any dispute that it was well within the skill in the art that you could use those kind of antibodies.
All right, thank you.
I think it is inescapable that even when you combine the five references that the board has relied upon and the examiner relied upon, there is no reference or no combination of them that very explicitly would put you in possession of certainty that, or reasonable likelihood, or however one wants to phrase the test, that in a human being you would be able to effectively treat HUS or to prevent it by using a subunit specific to SLT2 form of treatment, nor the specific quantifiable dosages that would be the starting point for any required dose ranging study in any clinical studies. If you look at some of the references, again, as the council described them, Pereira, for example. Pereira was looking for a quick screening device because there was an appreciation that you want to find out when somebody seems to have an enteric infection, is it one of these really bad kinds? And if you could identify the presence of a SALT II, which was associated with some of the more severe forms of infection, that would be a good thing. So he found some monoclonal antibodies that in a cell culture in vitro test could recognize the presence of the SALT II alpha region. Now that's a diagnostic to help you identify, yes, this person appears to have been exposed to virulent strains.
Well, that doesn't tell you. Does it make whether it's for diagnosis or treatment if it operates the same way?
Because you don't know that it does, Judge, until you actually do the testing. It is not at all predictable or with a reasonable likelihood of success that something in this kind of technology that may help you diagnose or that's elevated or detectable in a human setting.
Was essentially the same. The binding affinities are what made it work.
Well, but that's what didn't translate. Stronger binding affinities didn't necessarily give you the best suited monoclonal antibody for actual treatment or prevention. That's what's in those examples in the application that the board never discusses. That was some of the contrarian information. There are a lot of things in science where the detectable presence of something may help you diagnose, but it doesn't treat. Elevated PSA, there's no PSA drug therapy for prostate cancer.
It's not combinable because it was for a different purpose?
It doesn't teach you or give you any likelihood that you substitute the SALT II antibodies of Pereira and say, focus on SALT II alpha, and you will get an effective treatment for humans. It doesn't point you in that direction. Williams points you away from it. If you look at both the Williams specification passages we cited, and you look at the examples, he's all over the waterfront as to what might work in mice and in rabbits, neither of which really are very relevant to predict human success, because those are animals that don't develop HUS. And you can't infer that, hey, I use something to SALT 1 or I use a SALT 2 beta in a rabbit or a mouse and I got some good results, also got some bad results, what you're going to get. In fact, I think that the fact that Dr. Gunser had been even working with a piglet model for years and hadn't discovered
case,
this.
Is the essence of your case that even assuming all these references could be combined, for everything they teach, there would be no expectation that it would cure the disease in a human?
That's correct, Your Honor. Because there's nothing in the in vitro data or the animal models that anything was applied to that is predictive of success in humans until you do the experiments, which they did on the pig, the only model that really mimics the human condition, to derive quantifiable effective dosages found in the unexamined dependent claims and the overall key teaching about how this disease moves from enteric to systemic, which subunits work, and how you create a therapy based on it, which you don't get from looking at those references and predict will succeed.
I think we have the position of both parties clarified and appreciate the arguments. So take the appeal under advisement.
Thank you.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned from day to day.